exception for a woman's health. With the High Court's decision, doctors who violate the law will face up to 2 years in federal prison. Dr. Philip Darney is chief of obstetrics and gynecology at San Francisco General Hospital and UCSF. Both hospitals treat a significant number of high-risk pregnancies and thus perform more late-term abortions than other providers. Darney says the federal law doesn't provide a precise medical description of what procedure is now a crime, and he doesn't intend to follow it.
It will be very difficult for us to, in the midst of an operation, to call a lawyer and get the lawyer's opinion about whether what we're doing is right or not. We basically don't intend to change our practice.
The law will likely be difficult to enforce. Patients, nurses, or fellow physicians could report a colleague to the California Medical Board, which would then refer the case to the U.S. Attorney's Office. Planned Parenthood attorney Eve Gartner says prosecution will ultimately come down to the doctor's word against somebody else's.
Doctors are going to have to put themselves on the line and find out what the law means only when they're charged with committing a crime. And at that point, the federal courts, in the context of criminal prosecutions, will determine what this law really bans.
Gartner says physicians at Planned Parenthood clinics will follow the court's ruling. Partial birth abortion is not a medical term, but the chief medical officer for Bay Area Planned Parenthood, Dr. Ann Foster-Rosales, says there are numerous reasons physicians might use the procedure. For example, when a patient develops a serious heart or kidney condition during pregnancy, or when an infection, which doesn't harm the woman, causes an injury to the fetus's brain.
There could be all kinds of anomalies in the developing fetus, which sometimes are caught and sometimes they're not caught on early ultrasound.
Under the law, physicians cannot consider a woman's health when making a decision, only whether her life is in danger. That could mean some doctors might refuse to do any type of abortion, says Dr. Jean Connery. Connery is the California vice chair of the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists.
Anytime there's scrutiny of physicians' procedures, the easiest recourse is to stop performing any type of procedure at all.
California voters and lawmakers have long rejected restrictions on abortion that are often found in other states, like waiting periods or mandatory parental consent. Senators Dianne Feinstein and Barbara Boxer said the health of women who have high-risk pregnancies is now in jeopardy. For the California Report, I'm Sarah Varney.
A long-delayed but much-talked-about government reform issue is back on the table at the state capitol. Yesterday, the leader of the state assembly unveiled a new plan to change the process of redistricting, the once-a-decade redrawing of political maps. Sacramento Bureau Chief John Myers says the new plan is creative and controversial.
In the 2 years since Governor Schwarzenegger's redistricting reform initiative was defeated, the issue has been stymied by one major question. If the legislature doesn't draw political maps, who should? On Wednesday, Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez suggested something new. Give the power to a well-established watchdog agency.
What we're looking for here is balance. What we're looking for here is fairness.
The speaker's plan would hand the power over to the state's Little Hoover Commission, first established in 1962. Little Hoover is the place where government reorganization plans are examined and where investigations on everything from prison overcrowding to health care reform are carried out. The commission is independent of the legislature or the governor. However, all 13 of the commission's members are political appointees. In fact, 4 are sitting legislators. The Nunez plan would ban those sitting legislators from drawing the political maps, but the other 9 members, appointed by the governor and the majority party in the legislature, would have the final say on how the district boundaries are drawn. Still, Nunez says on numerous issues, the Little Hoover Commission has proved its independence, regardless of how its members are chosen.
A truly independent group that has a history of not bobbing and weaving, but of punching the lights out of the legislature every time it feels it's necessary to do so.
It's a step backwards in terms of a citizens' commission of real Californians drawing the district. The Little Hoover Commission is made up of political appointees. There's no way to get around that.
Assembly Republican leader Mike Vallines says as a result, his caucus won't vote for the speaker's redistricting plan. Numerous good government groups have also wanted the political maps to be drawn by a commission of citizens. And then there are Democrats who will criticize Nunez's plan because it gives away the power to draw congressional districts. Many Democrats want lawmakers to keep that power now that they control Congress. The proposal is likely to kickstart stalled discussions over redistricting, but it's a long way from finding consensus. And some government watchers still say only a voter initiative will ever change the process, not the give and take of political negotiations at the state capitol. For the California Report, I'm John Myers in Sacramento.
And that's the California Report for Thursday, April 19th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Dan Dreher. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California, and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. AARP and its more than 3 million California members working to ensure access to affordable, quality health care for all Californians. Online at aarp.org. And the California Healthcare Foundation and Cal Hospital Compare, a new website rating hospital quality in California at calhospitalcompare.org.
This is KZYX, and the preceding portion of the California Report was brought to you by the Mendocino Arts Center and, of course, our many listeners. It's just about 7 o'clock. And this is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits in Ukiah, K201HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and KZYX.org on the World Wide Web. Stay tuned for Education Now. My name is Athena Melville, and Education Now is being brought to you tonight by La Vida Charter School and, of course, our members. La Vida Charter School is a free public charter school offering independent study supported by culturally rich, child-centered on-site classes for kindergarten through 12th grade. Their annual open house and enrollment for next fall is Sunday, April 29th from 2 to 4 p.m., 459-6344. Well, my name is Athena Melville, and I'm going to give you some music, and then I'm going to get our guest, Laura Stalker, on the line, so here we go. And welcome to Education Now. It's 7 o'clock.
You, who are on the road, must have a code that you can live by. And so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by. And feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
Well, welcome to Education Now. Tonight, we welcome Laura Stalker, midwife, mother of three, and a founding member of the Lake International Charter School in Lake County. Laura received her B.S. in biology from Sonoma State University in 1994. She began her studies in midwifery over 10 years ago with a pregnancy of her first child, Keith. She and others in her area felt the need for an alternative to the regular public schools in their area, and thus the birth of Lake County International Charter School, and that's how it was born. Are you there, Laura? Hello, Laura, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Oh, good. Did you hear the introduction?
I did.
Oh, good. It's so glad. I'm so excited to have you with us tonight.
I know, it's such a pleasure for me.
Oh, good. That's wonderful news to hear. Well, I want everyone to know that I've known Laura since she was born. And her mother, Loretta, is a librarian, a graduate of UCLA. Her father, Jack Wadhams, is a college professor of mathematics, really made math fun. And it's just been my pleasure to know Laura and watch her grow. She was in summer arts with me many years ago in my home. And do you remember that, Laura?
I do.
Playing in the big mud holes and making videos. And it's just been a wonderful, wonderful pleasure for me. Well, Laura, I wanted to start out, first of all, by talking about your work as a midwife, because I thought if we talked about birth and then parenting and education, it would just be a natural progression.
It is, the birth of a school.
So you got your degree in biology first at Sonoma State. And did you feel that you got a good education there at Sonoma State?
I loved my education at Sonoma State. It was at during a time where, at the end of my education, it seemed like the population grew. But while I was there, it felt like it was still small. And there was a lot of personal attention from the instructors, and it was just a great time in my life.
And you were doing the Hutchings program, right?
Right. I did my general education through Hutchings.
Right, which is sort of an interdisciplinary core program.
Exactly.
Which I really loved. And then when you got married, and you got pregnant, and you decided to start thinking about doing a home birth.
Well, what happened was, is in my last semester at Sonoma State, I took a college class called Midwifery and Childbirth. And it was a funny timing, because here I thought my life was going a certain way, and I suddenly realized that midwifery was my calling. And so I did a doula class and became a doula. And before I could, I think I did one birth as a doula, and then I found a midwifery apprenticeship, which is what I had really wanted to do. And so it's never stopped since then.
Yes. I know I was really excited when you chose to do that. I know that, you know, looking at birth from a generational view, my grandmother, her generation was very comfortable with it. But then my mother's generation was not. You know, at birth, and of course my grandmother was not born in this country, and that might be another reason that she didn't look at birth as part of illness. But all of her daughters did, and my mother certainly thought of it as illness, you know, as something that you go to the doctor for. And so getting over that with my own pregnancies, I did not have them at home, but I did as much as I possibly could. I did all the Lamas and did as much as I could with the breathing and everything to do that, but didn't have quite the courage to have them at home. And then, now look, your generation, and you did it.
It's true.
Yes. And it's so sad that we had to go through that time when birth was taken away from women and as a celebration and a part of life into the view of it as an illness.
Correct. And it's now quite a moneymaker.
Oh, I see. To have the children
in the hospital, it's a lucrative income that you can count on.
Oh, I see what you're saying. The doctors can count, and the hospitals can count on it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, there were many struggles I know that women of my generation who wanted to have natural childbirth went through, and lots of prejudice for those of us who worked hard. So it's really comforting to me to see you and many other of your contemporaries pulling through with it, and with the experience. And how was it with Keith, the first birth?
My first birth. Well, it was really an amazing experience for me, because in my midwifery training, while I was pregnant with him, I actually attended some births that didn't go so very well. More in that year than in all the rest of the years combined. So one of the things that I feel really great about was that despite that, I still had a genuine belief that birth is normal and natural, and so I, you know, could access that for myself.
Yes.
And it was, you know, it was such a beautiful experience to just be in the comfort of my own home and to be supported by women and to have my husband included in every way that he wanted to be and to bring my first child in a gentle way.
Yes.
And there was no separation.
Yes, there was the bonding was not, there was no interruption.
No interrupted, right.
And it was no, there were no like glaring lights and...
No lights and no, you know, no drugs in either of our bodies.
Right.
But, you know, yeah.
And he took to the breast just...
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that beautiful? That's so, so beautiful. Now, you were a doula for... Now, can explain to our listeners what a doula is?
Well, a doula is somebody who assists women, usually in the hospital, and is sort of an advocate to help them negotiate the hospital so that they have the best chance of having the kind of birth they want to have.
Yes. And then, now, a midwife has more responsibility than a doula.
Exactly. A midwife, I mean, a doula has no... medical training necessarily, and she doesn't hold any responsibility for the outcomes of the birth. The women, you know, the women in the hospital are there under the care of the doctors and nurses, and she's just there as sort of an emotional support and helps them, you know, kind of, you know, say what they want in a clearer way. She also provides a continuity of care, because if you go into the hospital, you can have shift changes. So, you know, perhaps where you had a nurse that you liked, another one might come on that you don't like. And so the doula provides, you know, a constant person that's there supporting you.
That you trust.
Right.
Right. Yes, that's wonderful. And how many, as a midwife, how many children have you delivered?
Over 100. It's about 120 now.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
And in your experience, have you had, I know I just synchronistically, I was at a CD release party, and for someone, and I ran into a mother who you had delivered her three children.
Yes, I know, it's very fun to, there's a little boy who goes to the Lake County International Charter School, and I was at his birth, and he just recently had a birthday, and it's always fun to get to have that connection where I said to him, I was there when you were born. He was like, what? I'm like, yes.
And in those 120 births, did you experience anything really, you know, terrifying or... you know, something that you felt like, boy, if they'd have only been in the hospital.
No, and you know, I have been at a couple of births where the babies died.
Oh my.
Well, yes, but what was so wonderful was that the parents were allowed to be with that process in the, you know, in a very sacred way,
mm-hmm.
where I don't think that. You know, I'm not so familiar with what happens in a hospital, but to be able to really hold your baby and not have, you know, judgment put about that and to be able to do what you need to do, I think provides a more, a whole experience.
Yes.
If you're going to go through something so tragic and painful,
and are these
to have that same kind of support is different.
Right. Now, if are these deaths, do you think they could have been prevented if they weren't home births?
No. One of the babies had complications that were incompatible with life. So, you know, the mom got to be with that baby, and we didn't know that when she was pregnant. So when he came out, it was evident he had many malformations, and one of them was, you know, a heart that wasn't going to work. But he was alive for a few minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so instead of the baby being taken away and tried to be resuscitated, she got to be with him.
Yes.
And the other one was, you know, simply a stillbirth that, you know, who knows why those things happen.
Right. Who does know? So, you know, in all of that time, nothing that could have been prevented, you didn't experience anything that could have been prevented by using a hospital instead of a home birth or...
No.
And do you go to the hospital if a person wants to have a midwife in the hospital with them? Is that done as well as at home?
Well, many hospitals have nurse midwives who work for them.
Uh-huh.
And so if you wanted to have a birth in a hospital with a nurse midwife, you could do that. And ideally, that would provide you with, you know, a slightly more holistic, you know, amount of care.
Right.
But in my experience, there's not too much difference.
Yes. All right. Well, later on we're going to open the lines and people may have questions for you about midwifery. But unless you want to add something else, shall we go on then to parenting?
Sure.
Well, you know, I know you as a fabulous mother, and it tickles me no end to see you with Keith and James and John. But I know that you breastfed and you've been at home with your children, but at the same time you have been working.
It's true.
And how old was Keith when you started working?
Well, I started working last year out of necessity when my husband had an accident and could no longer support us.
Right.
So he was 9, and John, my youngest, was 4.
Yes. And somebody's trying to call us right now. Laura, should we take the phone call?
Or? Sure.
Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, hi. I'm sorry. Am I calling KZYX?
Yes, you are.
I'm not on the air, am I?
Yes, you are.
Oh, no. I'm calling for a strange reason. I wanted to ask somebody a question, but I don't want to be on the air.
Okay, well, call back and call the station numbers, 895-2324.
2324.
And you'll get an answering machine.
An answering machine? I won't be able to talk to anybody?
No, everyone's gone home for now.
Okay, can you...
Thank you. Bye now. Hello, Laura.
Yes.
Okay, let's continue.
How disappointing.
Yeah, she probably just heard the numbers and thought, I need to talk to them. So, mother and parenting. So I know that you didn't start working until Keith was 9, but all 3 of the boys had been born. And was it a choice of yours not to work, or you were planning on working, I think, weren't you? Because you were...
Well, I had always been doing midwifery.
Right, you'd always been doing...
Midwifery is such that it enabled... You know, my intention was always to be a stay-at-home mom with my children as long as I possibly could.
Even though you were a college graduate.
Yes. Yep. and, you know, I think originally the idea was that as the children grew old, and we originally were going to homeschool our children,
mm-hmm.
So that was another reason for me to be at home with them. But the idea was for my husband to start working less and for me to start doing more midwifery so that was, you know, so that he would have a little more time off as well.
Right, before the accident.
Yeah,
right.
I didn't anticipate going to work full time.
Right. Well, so let's talk about parenting. I know that there's a lot of discussion right now about universal daycare, you know, having daycare for everyone. And I think it's wonderful that something is provided, especially for mothers who have to work and, you know, and have to leave their children, because it's so difficult to make it now without 2 people in the home working. Or say you're a single parent and you have to work. And so I understand the need for really good child care. But I also know that with Head Start, that they had done some research and where they had given preschoolers, you know, some help with, you know, learning skills and offered them materials and worked with them. And then parents, and also a group of parents then, were working with their kids. And sure enough, the kids who had gotten the help ahead of time in a preschool or had worked with their parents did better in kindergarten. And so this was a big proof for why Head Start works. But what the research didn't say, which was also part of the study, was that those children who had worked with their parents did better in school and in life, not just in kindergarten, but throughout school and in life, than those children who had just a preschool. So I still feel that if it's possible, it's really valuable for children to be more one-on-one working with parents in preschool than to be in a quote-unquote preschool. Although if you find the right preschool, and you have to, but to find the right preschool, small, sensitive, you know, concerned where your child, you know, you
right.
have to just find it, right?
Right.
And so what do you find are some of the biggest challenges in parenting?
Wow. Challenges in parenting.
Uh-huh.
For me personally,
It's about striking a balance. I think that I tend to put my children before my marriage, before myself, kind of like they're the most important. And so for me, a big challenge is really making sure that I get the time that I need to recharge, and to make sure that my husband and I get enough time together where we have a strong relationship, because that provides the foundation for our family.
Right. I agree.
Yeah.
Yes, that seems paramount. And then, of course, you chose to have your children. It wasn't like... it wasn't that, you know, it was like, oh, gee, I'm pregnant.
Right.
I'm 14. Or, I mean, right. you were an adult.
Consciously choosing
to have children, which I think is also really important. And right now, did you hear about the latest that came down with the abortion, partial birth abortion? The Supreme Court knocked it down. And so here we are again. We're going to be, I mean, when women knew the plants, they didn't have to go to doctors to ask them, you know, they controlled whether or not they were going to have a child or not have a child.
Well, and you know, to kind of take that further is that when women were more in touch with their fertility cycles and, like you're saying, plants, there is a way where they had more control over their own bodies.
Yes.
And they weren't. I mean, we're in a culture of experts. It's like we go to other for everything.
Right, that's right. But, you know, indigenous people, Native Americans, didn't have big families. And I don't think you see those big families in the older, in the really older cultures. But because I think they did know the plants and they knew, you know, how to control their own cycles. And weren't.
Well, and nursing, I mean, nursing is a natural form of birth control. And so if you are nursing your children until they're two or three, you're, you know, having a longer period of time where you're not even fertile.
Right. Yeah. Although I do know people have told me that they did get pregnant when they were breastfeeding. So.
Well, it's not that it doesn't happen.
Uh-huh.
But if you're not breastfeeding at all, then you don't have, you know, any period of time.
Right. So, what would you, now, let's go on now to talk about the charter school.
Okay.
So you were going to homeschool your children, and then you decided that they needed more, a larger body of people.
Well, what happened was I was homeschooling, and I was with a group of my friends who were wanting to start a school for their children. And I originally joined the group because I wanted a place for my children to go. It was my hope that they could go and be able to do drama and music and, you know, some sort of extracurricular things at the school. So I originally signed on to help them develop, you know, part of a program that would enable me and other people to have access to something like that. And in the time that I was there, I remember at one point somebody came and gave a presentation about the International Baccalaureate Program, and it was a very moving presentation. I mean, it brought me to tears. And one of the things that I realized is that I don't feel like actualized my greatest potential in terms of learning how to learn and loving to learn. And if I hadn't done that, how was I really going to pass that on to my kids? And I don't know, I just got very excited about them being in a setting that provided more.
Right.
I mean, if it was an option between traditional public school, I wasn't very interested in that.
Right.
But the idea of having something else, I got really excited about it.
Yes.
And we had moved out to a rural, very isolated piece of property, and they weren't getting the kind of socialization that's important if you're homeschooling.
Right. And so originally you weren't looking for the academics. You could do that, but you were looking for the arts and the dance and the music and that kind of thing.
Right.
And then you found this group that was trying to start this international charter school, and you fell in love with it.
Exactly.
And so how long has the Lake County International How long has the Lake County International Charter School been operating?
Well, we are currently in our second year of operation, and it took us 3 years to get the school going.
Uh-huh.
So it's been 5 years.
5 years. I know I visited the school, and I was very impressed with what has happened in such a short time. And I know that you guys are looking for a new site, but it's just, it was so exciting when I was there to hear the older kids were going down to the river to build forts.
Right. Which is one of their favorite things.
Yeah, that's just so wonderful. So Lake County International Charter School offers multiple instructional approaches. And I noticed that when I was observing that there were many different teaching styles.
Yes.
I observed at least 4 different teaching styles. And that's project and inquiry-based coursework.
Correct.
Which means that it's rooted in real-world issues.
Yeah, and the idea is, as opposed to, a teacher being what they call, the sage on the stage, it's more like you're a guide on the side.
Yeah.
So you're trying to stimulate the children to ask their own questions so that they have more buy-in to what, than what their process is to answer the questions. And then it becomes more meaningful to them when they've, done that.
Right.
So the idea is to help them figure out what they want to learn, to guide them through, acquiring the, is it something that you can learn through books? Is it something you have to learn how to do? And then for them to assess themselves about how well they've learned it.
Yes, that's beautiful. That's just beautiful. It just follows all of the most important child developmental theories. And it's exciting, so exciting. And critical thinking and problem solving.
Right.
Which is so great, critical thinking. People are teaching people facts in so many schools today instead of teaching them how to do critical thinking, because information is going to be constantly changing.
Right, and if you're somebody like myself who happens to be good at that, then you can go through the system and excel. But like I was saying, I don't feel like I really learned how to do that. I mean, I wasn't supported in that.
Mm-hmm.
But for children who perhaps that isn't their strong suit, it's also to find ways for them to feel great about what they are good at.
Yes, yes. Their own individual process, and to feel great about their own individual process and follow their passion.
Right.
And then the creative arts, you do creative arts at the charter school. And can you tell us some of the different things you do? Do you do music?
So it's, it's what we call our specialty program. And it is, from last year to this year, it's undergone quite a bit of change. And it will continue to evolve as we try to find, the right way to work it. But so this year, the children do so the different grades are doing different classes. So some of the little grades do a choir, so they sing, and they were learning recorder. And so that's about the extent. Oh, and the older grades, one of the group is doing garage band on the computer, which they love.
Yes.
And they get to do, all the classes do environmental education.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And all from K through 8, they're all learning Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
They are doing drama.
Oh, great.
And they've done different things. Like last year they did Tai Chi, and they had a juggling class. And what else are they doing? My mind's going blank.
I noticed a lot of art.
Right. We do have a fantastic art teacher who is doing some neat artwork with them.
Mm-hmm. And I noticed that there was computer.
Yes.
And the technology, which is so wonderful. That, there's the arts, but technology, that was exciting.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was important to us, is that we have, that the children would become fluent in technology, from first grade on. And so in first and second grade, they do, they're learning a little bit about how to type, and they do internet research,
And then as they, you know, progress, the older grades are doing PowerPoint presentations and, of course, internet research. I mean, that's one of our, being in a new site, we don't have a very established library, so we rely heavily on the internet for research. Yeah, it's very important in this world.
Yes, I think it is, too. And I was, the other thing is there's multi-age classrooms.
Right.
So all the kids in one classroom are not all the same age or all the same grade level, which is so also, I think, so very important.
Yeah, that was important to us. And, you know, we've worked it out so that our math, all the teachers teach their math at the same time. So even some children travel into a different classroom. So there are, you know, second graders who might join the third graders for their math period, uh-huh, if they're advanced, and you know, fifth graders who join the sixth graders who join the seventh and eighth grade class,
so they can move. So they're moving at their own pace,
right?
Right. I noticed that too, and that was really encouraging to me.
Right. I mean, it is a little easier to send children into a higher class than it is to bring them down, because there is that understanding that they're going down to the smaller grades. But we did have a student doing that last year, and it worked very well for him.
Mm-hmm. And then a high level of parent involvement.
That is our ideal, and it's not where we'd like it to be, you know, yet, but we keep working with how to do that more. It's hard because there's so many parents who have to work, and so they're not always available in the classrooms where we'd love to have them.
Right.
Though we do ask all of our parents to contribute 75 hours a year. And so some, you know, a lot of parents can do that on the weekends, or they get involved in, you know, fundraising activities. And, you know, hopefully over time, as we become more established, the parents will continue to provide that, you know, because it's so needed.
Right.
It's really hard to, I mean, that, you know, and we, the kind of one of the philosophies of the school is that we need the parents and we need their support, and the children need them to show up.
Yes, they do. I think it will grow, but as you say, you know, so many of them work and have to work. That's the other, I find, is the failing of our culture, that we don't have more respect for the time that a person spends with their children, and by, you know, not making it so hard. And now, the curriculum is non-political and non-sectarian.
Hopefully.
But it's meeting, it meets or exceeds the California state standards.
Yes.
As mandated by the California Department of Education.
Right.
And that the, that it's the, I love the idea that you're doing all these different international, it promotes understanding and respect and appreciation of diversity in the world.
Right.
Now, do you guys use standardized textbooks, or are teachers choosing their own materials?
They have been choosing their own.
Great.
So,
that's great.
And they will continue to do that.
Right. That's wonderful. I know it's a dedication to learning for a lifetime. It reminds me very much of an excellent Montessori school. And it's free. And you're working at the school, right?
I am working in the school.
Uh-huh.
I work in the office as the administrative assistant. So there is the director and I that try to hold it all together.
Well, one of the things that I love is that you don't... I remember when I was there, someone came and wanted to enroll a kindergartner, but it would require that person get on, that little child get on the bus, and I was so proud of you. You said, "Well, I wouldn't do it, but some people do, and you know, you if you want to, I wouldn't do it, but."
Right. I mean, that's one of the things that that I appreciate so much. I mean, just even having a small setting and mm-hmm. being able to really know each child personally. As we all, you know, all the staff members know everyone there.
Yes,
and
I could tell.
For me to have the, you know, the priority and the time to really spend time with children who
yes.
need a little extra,
yes.
you know, emotional support,
yes.
is one of my favorite things.
Oh, that it is. It's a wonder. It's a wonderful thing. Well, Laura, I'm going to put on some music, and I'm going to read out the numbers, give you a chance to, I don't know if you need a drink of water or anything, and give out the numbers and put on a little music break, and then I'm going to come back, and we'll see if we have phone calls, or we'll just delve deeper.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go with some music.
Now's the time. Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And due respect to the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land in the world in which we live.
And help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can, why can't we if we want to? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can, great gosh almighty. Yes we can, I know we can.
The future, the little bit of boys and girls, and make this land a better land, and the world in the which we live, and help each man be a better man with the kindness that you give. And I know we can make it.
I know that we can.
I know done well we can work it out.
Oh yes we can. I know we can. Yes we can. Why can't we if we want it? Yes we can.
I know we can make it work.
I know that we can.
I know we can make it if we try.
Oh yes we can, I know we can. Yes we can, great gosh almighty. Yes we can, I know we can.
Well, I'm back. This is KZYX, KZYZ. And this is Education Now, and we're talking with Laura Stalker, midwife, mother of three, and a founding member of Little Lake International Charter School. Laura, are you there?
I am here.
All right. I hope you got a little breather there.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to give out the numbers. Again, if people want to call in, it's 895-2448. Or 800-499-7117. If you'd like to ask Laura any questions or you'd like to talk to us, those are the numbers, 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. Well, Laura, I was wondering, now I remember when you went to Montessori school when you were younger, right?
Yes, I did.
And then when did you go into public school?
In kindergarten.
Oh, someone's calling us. Hold on.
Okay.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Very good. My name is Julie, and I have several questions for Laura.
Great.
My name is Julie. I live in the Anderson Valley. I am the parent of a 20-month-old, and I am a member of a parenting group here locally, and we're trying to figure out how to start some sort of a school. So I have several questions regarding the school.
Sure.
First of all, I'm wondering why international?
Well, when we were in dialogue about what we wanted to do, we didn't want to commit to, you know, just being a Montessori or just being a Waldorf school. We wanted to be able to pull from, you know, as many different resources as we could. And in that process, we met a woman who told us about the International Baccalaureate Program, which is an organization that's worldwide. And as we learned more about it, it really reflected almost exactly what we were trying to accomplish. And so by kind of going that way, we also lent ourselves a little bit more credibility because the International Baccalaureate is becoming quite renowned. Children who graduate from high school with an IBO diploma have quite an increased ability to get into high colleges. So,
okay.
Yeah, and the international part for us was reflective of our, you know, that it was important for us, for our children, to have a global understanding as opposed to just, you know, here we are in the U.S. and it's all about us.
Great. Okay, another quick question. Whose charter?
So, I'm sorry, I don't understand your question. The charter?
Yeah.
So a charter school is either run through your local district, and sometimes local districts won't do it, and then you can go through the county. So it's kind of like they sponsor the charter. But we are considered our own school district. We're kind of like our own entity.
Is there a public school in your area?
Yes. There's a bunch of different public schools, and then the charter is a public school. We get funded in the same way.
Yeah.
But we have a little bit more freedom about what we do.
So you're your own school district. I was under the impression that a charter had to be, like you said, sponsored by somebody.
They do.
And so who sponsors you? Is it the local public
school? Our local school district has agreed to sponsor us.
That is very generous of them.
It is. It really is. They've been fantastic to us.
All right. And I have one more question, and I will take it off the air. Basically, how did you get started? What's the organizational structure of the school? Maybe you have some hints or tips for us.
Well, what I would suggest that you do is start calling charter schools and try to find a key member who can help guide you. And, I'd be happy to actually refer you to someone if she's willing to. It was really her tenacity and incredible drive that allowed the school to become a reality. So it takes an incredible amount of commitment and an incredible amount of work, but it helps if you get yourself help from somebody who's already done it.
Great. Well, I would love to get that information from you, and maybe through the radio station or something like that I could
call. We have another call.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hello. Hello. You're on the air.
Hi. How's it going?
Fine.
Good. I was calling to speak to Laura about midwifery.
That's great.
Well, I was calling because I'm actually 8 months pregnant, and I have a one-year-old.
Congratulations.
I'm planning on doing my next birth as a VBAC. My first was emergency C-section, and I was just wondering if you had any experience with working with any women doing VBACs.
I do, and it's one of the most rewarding experiences for myself and also for the women, obviously, to be able to kind of undo their previous experience and get to, you know, have a natural birth. And
right.
It's just amazing the kind of healing that happens for people.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to that part of it.
Yeah.
I know it's definitely becoming a lost art because there's so many women who are given C-sections and they think automatically that the next birth has to be a C-section. And actually more and more hospitals around the area, there's only two places hospital-wise that allow you to still do VBACs, and they're slowly dwindling.
Right, they're making it very challenging.
Right, so...
And really,
you know,
not
women,
for any good reason either.
Right, exactly, no good reason. So women are having less options, places to go to have their second baby if they feel more comfortable doing it at a hospital, you know? So they're just, the only option for them is to have another C-section, and so...
Or to have a home birth.
Or to have a home birth,
yeah.
Exactly. But not all women feel comfortable.
No,
with that,
no. I mean, a very small proportion of
right.
people do feel comfortable doing that.
Right, especially with, you know, with all of the things they feed you about the next time you have a baby after cesarean. You know, it's just like they feed you with a lot of fear that, you know, all these things could happen to you.
Right.
And yet they leave you with no place to go to have a baby to feel comfortable in a hospital setting, you know, if that's where you feel comfortable.
Yes, it's very sad.
I just feel like, you know, we need to be making a huge effort because now it affects me, like, personally. And, you know, I've been making this choice for the last 8 months of, you know, how we're going to have this baby and where we're going to have him at. We live an hour away from any hospital. So, you know, it's like you have to go through a lot to, find where you feel comfortable having a baby. And then I just feel like we need to like reassure women out there that are having C-sections and are having another baby that they can do it and their body is totally capable and fine, and we need to just be putting that out there more to women and giving the power back to them that their bodies are capable of having babies after cesarean.
That's right.
Well, you've just done that too. Someone else was trying to call in, but they gave up. Please try. Please try again if you were trying. It's 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. Is there anything more you want to say?
No, that's all. I won't take any more of your time, but thank you so
much. Oh, it's wonderful that you called, and you can take as much time as you like.
Yeah, and thank you so much for, you know, really following what you know to be true and not listening to all the fear.
Right.
Good luck to you.
Good luck.
So
really good luck to you, and thank you for calling.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too.
Much love.
Much love. That was really cool.
Whoever
was trying to call should go ahead and try to call us again at 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. Otherwise, Laura and I are going to continue for at least a few more minutes, right? I think it's wonderful that people are asking about the charter school. You know, tonight our Education Now, the underwriting is a charter school, and I'm going to be reading some promos about charter schools, and we have quite a few charter schools here in our area.
You do.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that they exist so that parents have choices and the children have choices. So we were talking about you started your education. You started in a Montessori school for preschool and kindergarten.
Right, and then kindergarten I went into a traditional public school.
Public school, right, in Fountain Valley.
Right.
And so it was very, did you experience it as different than the Montessori school?
Well.
Or do you remember?
How much do I remember? I can't say that I remember the difference.
Uh-huh.
I wish I could.
But you were saying that you don't feel that what you got in public school in Southern California, that you were allowed to reach your full potential.
Well, no. I mean, I happen to be quite gifted. I'm a great test taker. Do you know what I mean?
I have a high aptitude
for memorizing things. So, you know, I could go through that system. But what I felt was lacking was the support for me to really discover who I was and what I was good at and how to, you know, really move forward. And additionally, that there was no emotional support, or, you know, I even go so far as to say, there were no life skills taught. And, you know, if you don't get that from home, where do you get it from?
Right. That's right. I agree with you. Although I remember seeing you in lots of plays.
Yes. And, there were still the arts when I was in school.
Yes.
And so, and that's gone for the most part
now. It's gone.
And that's really painful.
Yes.
Like, there's a little boy at our school who's an amazing artist, and, you know, he doesn't excel academically, and to see him come in and really be honored for what he does well, he has just blossomed. I mean, he's just come out of himself. And
someone's calling us, Laura.
Okay.
Hold on. Hello?
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 Hi, Athena. This is Mary MacDonald.
Hi, Mary MacDonald.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great.
This is my Laura on the phone with us here.
I heard that. Well, yeah. I was just calling because I heard your voice on the radio, and I'm just so impressed. I've listened to a few programs that you've done recently, and I just wanted to call and tell people out there, you know what? Take the power of education back. It starts with the family.
That's right.
Always. And that has never changed since the beginning of time.
That's right.
And, you know, I have a son, Douglas, who's graduating from high school and going off to college.
Yes.
And Zachary and I are finishing our last year of homeschooling because he'll be starting high school next year also.
Uh-huh.
And he'll be going to a charter school. And you are the one who empowered me.
Oh, well, thank you, Mary. That's beautiful of you to say.
You empowered me as a mom to remember that I did know what my children needed.
Oh, thank you, Mary.
And that education is for a lifetime for my kids.
Yes. And it was a good one for you, too, right?
It was fabulous. I have had the best time, I think, of all of us.
All right.
But too, and I really wanted to remind people that, you know, the family in itself is a huge learning environment.
Yes.
And such a great place to focus emotional, mental, spiritual, and academic growth for everyone involved.
Yes, indeed.
And so I, to all those listeners out there, and to you and your guest, that, you
Laura.
Know what, this is the way we need to change the world.
Thank you, Mary. Someone else is calling. I'm going to try and get
Great.
Them on. Thanks
okay,
for calling.
Bye.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello, Laura.
Hi.
I was wondering, not that this would seem to be off point.
Laura, this is Lanny.
Okay.
No, it isn't.
Oh, it isn't. Okay.
No, let me continue.
Okay.
The biggest wrench that could be thrown into the charter school movement would be this carbon obsession that we all have to have, because many parents have to drive the kid to the school and then pick him up some distance.
Correct.
Well, what can you do to minimize the carbon debt?
Well, one of the things that we're doing is we made an arrangement with our public bus system to drop children off at our school and pick them up. And I'd say a third of our students actually ride the public transit to our school.
Terrific.
Yeah. And we are a countywide school, but most of the people coming are coming from quite close by. And the children who come from a distance primarily ride the bus.
And if anyone questioned that, I could be rather confident and say most of the kids are not incurring much carbon debt by getting to the charter school.
Well, right.
Well, you're the authorities, and the best you can do is the best you can do.
Right, and I mean, I think, you know, if you have a population of people who are trying to have you know, a school that is environmentally sound, then you put energy into grant writing and you get your school a, you know, a bus of its own that's, you know, hybrid or, you
yes,
know, whatever it is that you
any,
need to do.
Any.
And, you know, again, that takes the parent involvement to have the time and energy to do that kind of grant writing, but that's certainly something we've talked about.
Okay, guys, carry on.
Thank you so much for calling.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Well, he just sounds like Lanny.
Well,
Laura, we can take another call or two if people want to call us at 895-2448 or 1-800-499-7117. But before we get going too much further, Laura, is it all right if I give out contact information?
Sure.
Can I give your email address?
Yes.
So that's Yasmin Midwife. YASMINEMIDWIFE at yahoo.com. Once again, Yasmin Midwife at yahoo.com. And then the contact information for the Lake County International Charter School is info at lcics.org. And you can also check out, they have a beautiful website, www.lcics.org. So there is the contact information if you want to get a hold of Laura or the Lake County International Charter School. You now have the information out there. Well, I really have enjoyed this time. It seems like it went kind of fast, and I'm wondering if there's something really that that I left out, that we were talking about your own childhood, which I totally enjoyed because, of course, I got to participate in it.
Well, and you were such a wonderful part of my childhood.
Oh, well, that's beautiful of you to say. But then, of course, when we moved north, you were 9 when we left Southern California, but I got to see you sometimes, and then you moved up here, and I get to see a lot more of you.
Yes, I love when that happens.
I love when that happens, too. Well, I guess we should... is there anything else that you would like to say? Do you think that you will continue to see midwifery as your primary goal in terms of your own passion?
Yeah, it really is. There's just, it's such sacred and holy work to be with families when they are going through this rite of passage. There's, you know, everything else kind of pales in comparison.
Right.
Yeah.
When you mention that rite of passage, I think that's the other thing that I know that your parents, Jack and Loretta, and other people who we were all teaching at the college there, and we noticed that students were having such a difficult time because they didn't feel connected. There was such a breakup, and many of the kids were going to these reborn churches, and so we decided that we had to create community. If we weren't all going to be going to some organized religion, we had to create community, and so we did that with you and our children and some of the other faculty members. We would get together, and then they tried to bring that to the students at Golden West by doing this thing called the Oz Cluster, and they developed a program where the kids could really see the interconnections between all of the different disciplines to try to give them what they hadn't gotten. And then, of course, everything fell apart with Proposition 13, and we moved from a school as an extension of the family and a caring profession into the business model. And we are where we are today.
And we are.
Yes, where we are today. Well, I want to thank you again, and I guess we should just say good night so that I can do some of the housekeeping here at the station. But I'm going to send you a recording of this, and I've already promised your mother one for her birthday.
Oh, well, thank you. Oh. It has been so fun.
Oh, it's been really fun. And, Will, I'm sure I'm going to get some feedback from people, and then maybe we'll have to have you back to delve a little more deeply into midwifery and to parenting and into the charter school.
I would love to do that.
It's such a wonderful charter school. I'm telling you, I really enjoyed my visit.
Thank you so much.
And thank Paul for sharing you with us tonight.
I will.
And all the kids.
Yes.
Good night, Laura.
Okay, good night.
Well, that was Laura Stalker. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed bringing it to you. I want to tell you, do a few PSAs with you here. On the 24th, United for Progress, members of the community will be having a roundtable discussion about ways to reduce your energy consumption and help slow global warming. Panelists include Janet Orth from the Willits Renewable Energy Development Institute, Patrick Cordry from the Oz Organic Farm, and Mendocino High School student Natalie Cox, teacher Matt Lapp, and others. You can contact 650-380-0052, and the contact name is Matt Lapp. And then, let's see here. Oh, the Tree of Life Montessori Charter School is having an open house Wednesday, April 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. at 241 Ford Road at the Redwood Empire Fairgrounds. Tree of Life Montessori Charter School invites the public to its open house on Wednesday, April 25th from 5 to 7 p.m. Enrollment applications for next year will be accepted for multi-age classes serving children ages 5 through 14. And, of course, it's a charter school, so it's free. If you want more information, you can contact Celeste Beck at 462-0913. Well, coming up after Education Now will be the Treehouse with W. Dan, which is always fun. My contact information is hermes@pacific.net. That's H-E-R-M-E-S at Pacific, P-A-C-I-F-I-C.net. And you can also check me out on the web, and you can get any program that's been here on Education Now, as well as recordings of the workshops I did with the homeschooling conference in last August at www.pacificsites, pacificsites.com/tilde. And tilde is just above, you know, it's the top key on the left-hand side of the keyboard is the tilde. Tilde Hermes, H-E-R-M-E-S. So www.pacificsites.com/tilde Hermes. And I want to remind you all to check out the Alliance for Childhood, allianceforchildhood.org, because all of the healthcare professionals, pediatricians, child development specialists, lawyers, you name it, Everyone is so concerned about what's happening in education, so many professionals, and you can just add your name to the list. I also wanted to tell you that the Mendocino Land Trust April newsletter has an article on the Wartburg students and their professor, Dr. John Melville, who were here with us on March 15th when I aired the show, the pre-recorded show, and that was wonderful to see. And next month in May, I will be bringing you, I'm going to do a special focus on Montessori. We didn't do her for Woman of the Year, but she really is quite the woman. And it's the 100th anniversary of Montessori education. And one the speaker that I'm very excited to share with you is Christopher Dodds, who is, of course, running for President of the United States. And so I just know that you're going to love this show, and that will be the third Thursday in May. Well, I thank you all for joining me this evening. Stay tuned for Earth and Sky. This is KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, K201HR 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, and KZYX.org on the World Wide Web. And this is Athena Melville, your host for Education Now, saying good night, and thank you very much for joining me this evening. And please stay tuned for The Treehouse. And the preceding portion of Education Now has been brought to you by La Vida Charter School. Thank you, everyone. Here, I'm going to get up Earth and Sky for you. At least I'm going to try. I'm going to try to get up Earth and Sky for you. Here we go, or it's the 19th, and it should work.
April 19th, the slender waxing crescent moon shines in the west shortly after sunset tonight and resides quite close to two major celestial attractions, Venus, the brightest of all planets, and the Pleiades, the most celebrated of all star clusters.
Venus is easy to see because it's the brightest star-like object in the western twilight sky. The Pleiades is much dimmer than Venus, but it's still readily identifiable. You'll easily recognize the Pleiades as a tiny dipper-shaped pattern of six little stars all wrapped in mist. The Pleiades is small but distinctive.
A few weeks from now, the Pleiades star cluster will disappear into the sun's glare. The historic Zuni of New Mexico called the Pleiades their seed stars. They knew it was safe to plant seeds in spring once the Pleiades were no longer visible in evening dusk.
Unlike the Pleiades cluster, the Moon and Venus don't shine in the west on this date every year. The Moon and Venus were considered wanderers by the early stargazers, but these worlds do exhibit regular cycles. On this date, 19 years from now, the waxing crescent moon will return to almost the same place in the sky, right by the Pleiades cluster. As for Venus, it'll return to virtually the same spot in the sky every 8 years.
So that's the Moon, Venus, and Pleiades tonight. We're Block and Bird for Earth and Sky.
We're at earthsky.org.
Warning, The Treehouse contains immature adult themes that may not be appropriate for sober, serious-minded individuals. Listener indiscretion is advised.
Zip-ride-o. Everyone's a winner, bargains galore. That's right, you too can be the proud owner. The quality goes in before the name goes on.